Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson. Lori spends her days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. She talks to students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. She's here to share their stories along with other insights with you. So let's talk learning disabilities.
Hey everybody, this is Lori. Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. We are back for 2026. I hope everyone had a great holiday and is their New Year's are off to a really great start. I am joined by my friend Sydney. She has been on the podcast before and she works with us. She's also my stepdaughter, but you know.
Hi there. I'm glad to be here.
Just love having her around. But today we wanted to talk a little bit about high stakes testing and the process of requesting accommodations. And really specifically, we want to talk a lot about why your request for accommodations might get denied. So Sid, tell me, like, because you take so many of our phone calls, what are some of the tests that you feel like we get the most calls for? People are like desperate for accommodations on.
Honestly, a lot of the time I think there's like two groups. It is either you are high school age and you are panicking about either your ACT, SAT. I would say we probably get that the most of parents that are freaking out because they had no idea that there was this long drawn out process to get accommodations for ACT, SAT. But then we also get the other side of the coin where it is older college students that are about to take the LSAT, the MCAT, and they have either been receiving accommodations throughout their college experience and they kind of already know what the deal is and they're just, you know, needing to update the testing, or they have absolutely no idea what's going on. They have been thrown into a panic because someone has told them, you could get accommodations, you could benefit from this, but they have no idea what that process really looks like.
And I think that's probably that second group is the most frustrating because it's always a tutor or a counselor at school that's like, yeah, hey, you know, you're really struggling to finish your practice test. So you should really look into getting extra time. And that sounds amazing, doesn't it? Like,
it's good in theory. It's like, wow, where's that been all my life? But then they have no idea the bureaucracy that goes on behind that.
No, it's obscene. And so for the people that have been receiving accommodations, they've got some hope. But if they haven't ever been receiving accommodations and they are about to take any of those tests, whether it's the SAT, ACT, or we're further along and we're into the LSAT, MCAT, GRE, so on and so forth, your chances are much slimmer in getting accommodations, specifically extended time.
Yep. That seems to be the hardest when it comes to it's either 25% or 50%. And usually I think you can get the 25% relatively easy depending on which one it is, but the 50% seems to be a real, real struggle, and hardly I don't think I've really ever talked to anybody that gets 50% unless it is like a severe case.
Well, and it's funny because I was going back through some of the denial letters. So when someone applies for accommodations, they need our evaluation and then they'll let me know if they've been approved or denied. And I always want to read the denial letter if they've been denied because I want to know kind of what we're working with because it's totally legitimate to appeal the decision. And so when I go back through the denial letters, what I find really interesting, especially with MCAT, that seems to be the one we deal with the most. Most often they are approving things like stop the clock breaks, stretch breaks, get up extended break time. Like those seem to be really easy to get. But on almost every one of these, the ones that they're not approving are the extra time. I have a handful of 25%ers that want 50.
So why would you say they would rather approve like stop the clock breaks over extra time accommodations? Like what is the reasoning behind that if we're trying to like explain that to someone?
I think it's because it doesn't extend your time with the test. So it allows you to, if you have ADHD or have any really any kind of physical disability where you might need to get up and move around, you might need to go to the bathroom, you might need to have a snack break, you might need to stretch. It's not giving you any extra time in front of that test because they stop the clock, but you are closing the book or the computer or whatever, and you're moving away from the test. Whereas extra time is more time with the test. That is an absolute leg up right? Mm-hmm. Now, it's not a leg up and it's not an unfair advantage. If you truly have a disability,
right,
you deserve that and you should get that. We should be able to level the playing field. The problem is that while we can show that somebody has that need, or at least in our opinion, they have that need, they don't have to agree.
Right.
Which is really crazy. Mm-hmm. And it's so frustrating. And so some of the things that I wanted to kind of go over is that what they are looking for, and it's crazy going back and reading some of these, and I've got them as far back as like 2019 because I hold on to them. The wording doesn't change from mm-hmm. the most recent one I've received to all the way back to 2019.
Very cold and impersonal.
It really is. And it's crazy to me because you're applying for medical school, right? You're getting ready to sit down and take the MCAT. I have no idea. I've never taken the MCAT or the LSAT. I have zero interest in taking those tests. But I can guarantee you that those tests are 150 times harder than the SAT.
Oh, for sure.
Right? And so just because you did okay on the SAT without accommodations, and again, their definition of okay is just average, but because you performed adequately without accommodations, then why would you need them on this test? Well, it's not apples to apples.
It's not. Yep. And I don't think that's the problem a lot of people, unfortunately, don't understand is they take it very personally. And it's, you know, it is not them saying, well, do you actually have this disability? It's how does this disability impact you on this test in this way? So it's very not like questioning you. It is how is this helping you or not helping you on this test?
And that's just it. And they'll say in these letters that just the disability alone is not mm-hmm. reason to receive accommodations. We have to show what's called a functional limitation of your daily functioning skills. So things like concentrating, reading, but it's also walking, sitting, like all your daily, you know, the things that you need to function day to day. How does this disability impact you on a day-to-day basis? And how long has it impacted you? Is this something you just woke up with last week and now all of a sudden you want accommodations? Right. Or is this something you've been dealing with as far back as, you know, elementary school? And they will look at your high school transcript.
Right. Like, did you have a 4.0 all throughout college and then suddenly you're needing extended time? To them, that doesn't make any sense, because if you're doing well with no support throughout your entire academic history, they do not see that need and they will shut that down really quickly.
And I will tell you that ADHD and anxiety are the two biggest hurdles. I feel like dyslexia, there's more meat there. There's more proof that there's an academic difficulty. It totally impacts clearly your reading.
Right.
Right. But when you've got anxiety and ADHD, it's, while I can show proof, it's still a little bit more subjective.
It is. It's hard to show like a functional limitation for that, because ADHD and anxiety impact everybody a little bit differently. Some people kind of just clam up on standardized tests. Some people, it's different for everyone.
So one of the things that I was just reading on one of these MCAT ones, where they did approve stop the clock breaks, extended breaks, separate testing room, and permission to move about the testing room. They approved all of that. But they said that they did not approve the extended time. The available documentation does not provide sufficient evidence of functional limitation to support an approval. Here's why we couldn't approve these. Extended time. Diagnosis alone is not evidence of impairment or disability, rather evidence of functional limitation when compared to most people in the general population and consistent with the request accommodation is necessary. Requested accommodation is also necessary. Your documentation does not provide enough evidence of functional limitation to support the requested level of accommodation. While we note, this obviously was an ADHD one, while we note your executive function difficulties and your evaluator's recommendations for extended test taking time, your assessment indicates you're generally functioning at the average range across cognitive and academic tasks mm-hmm. that does not indicate a normative impairment. Okay, let me stop right there. This is the part that really just gets under my skin, because the thing is that, and I've said this before on other podcasts, so I apologize if you guys have already heard this, but I don't have a test that mimics the type of thinking and processing that you have to do on the LSAT or MCAT. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist. The type of reading that we make you do under time constraints,
it's not the same.
It's not hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, for somebody with dyslexia, it's all hard. But for somebody with anxiety or ADHD, like it's not hard. The passages are crazy short. The questions are easy. It's only a 20-minute time limit. The MCAT is like a bazillion hours. It's like 8 hours. It's obscene, right? So how do I prove to the AAMC or the LSAC that these folks are going to struggle on this test just because they did okay on the Woodcock-Johnson reading fluency 3-minute time test?
Right.
Whoop-de-doo, right? Like, I get it. It's incredibly frustrating. And while a lot of naysayers out there, as a matter of fact, I just read an article in The Atlantic about people thinking that because the number of students getting accommodations in college has increased substantially, and that some people are looking at that as sort of a way to work the system. Clearly, I disagree because I just think we're better at identifying the needs now, right?
Right.
But also, I feel for these people. Yeah.
It's hard.
I feel for these students, right?
Yeah. It's like this is your
they've been doing all the tutoring.
Yep. They're putting in the work.
Yes.
For the most part, this is not someone's like first attempt at trying to get support. Like, these people have been struggling their whole lives. They have failed classes. They have, you know, done hours and hours of tutoring in K through 12 and in college. So this is not like their first disappointment.
No. So this other paragraph on here, I think this one's interesting too. You have a history of strong academic functioning during the first 3 years of college and on standardized exams, including the ACT and SAT, in parentheses, exams with format like the MCAT, without accommodations. Okay, so yes, it's multiple choice, and you take it in a room where you can't talk to anybody, the format, but the content is not even close.
Not even similar, right. That's a high school level assessment.
It breaks my heart. And so that is one of the things that when I write an appeal letter, one of my kind of go-to statements or paragraphs is about the difference between the SAT and the MCAT and the level of processing, and it's the stakes are higher. Again, I get going to college is a big deal, but you know, you're going to get in.
Yeah.
But with the MCAT, that's your career.
It is. That's your life on the line right there. Mm-hmm.
And if a little bit of extra time is going to be the difference in you getting into a school or not getting in at all, I feel like that's huge. You're changing the outcome of somebody's life.
Right. Well, the frustrating thing for me especially is when we talk to a lot of these people, they have taken it several times. And when they fail, it's not by a large margin. It is like increments. And they are just at their wit's end because they are getting so close so many times. And if they could just have that, even that 25% extra time, they might not even use the full thing. But even those extra few minutes could mean all the difference.
So that is like the bar exam. We've had a couple people, same bar exam, with a couple different states, because, you know, we work with clients across the country. So I've had two denials from New York. And on one of them, this poor guy, God love him, and it breaks my heart for him to this day, but his processing speed was so low. The man had terrible anxiety, and it impacted his ability to do the processing speed tasks. And so his scores were really low. Mm-hmm. The denial letter accused us of skewing the results. Like, they didn't believe he could be that low in processing speed.
You have no skin in the game.
I'm like, why would I lie? Well, he paid me, I guess they think. I don't know. That one, I was not happy about.
Mm-mm.
I'm like, why would I lie? That's unfair.
Right. We are an unbiased third party that is just here to report on our standardized testing scores.
But, you know, we had the college admission scandal thing where people were paying.
That's true. I bet they are. They're probably more wary, but, you know, it's hard.
Way.
But I guess with that, I mean, were they faking like assessments like these, or was it just?
Yeah. No, they were paying. There was a psychologist. They were paying to give them the documentation they needed. That is, since that, whenever that happened in the middle 2000s, wasn't it? It was pre-COVID for sure.
It was.
But
yeah.
I feel like ever since then, the
very suspicious
process of getting accommodations has completely changed.
Now that they think everyone's trying to cheat the system after that.
Everybody's trying to cheat the system.
We've got to put everyone
through. And so they want this. And those people didn't have a history. So that's their thing now. You have to have a history. Right. So when we have, now don't get me wrong, we had a client, we had a potential client, they weren't ever a client, call us. I don't know if this was not that long ago. And their child was like a 4.0 AP student, but couldn't get like a 1600 on the SAT and thought that they needed extra time. Yeah, that's not what this is for, right? That's not what this is for.
They just want to hire.
This is truly for. Mm-hmm. No, this is truly to level the playing field. This is for people that no matter how hard they try and how hard they study and it doesn't matter how smart they are, they can't finish. So they don't get to show how smart they are.
Exactly. So in cases where we're working with adult clients that have like really truly struggled like their whole lives, but they've never had testing, whether it's, you know, their parents didn't want them tested when they were younger or they just developed coping strategies and like squeaked by the whole time. You know, they're looking for a history of support. So what do we say for adults that are just now getting a diagnosis and, you know, their 30s and 40s, but because they were never tested, never had access to accommodations?
We've got that. And you know what else we have? We have some people that culturally, their families didn't believe in it. And they might be early 20s and they're ready now, but they never had that. So here's the beautiful thing about all these tests. There is one little light of a ray of hope. You are part of the process of applying for these accommodations is that you write a personal statement. Mm-hmm. And that is where you lay it all out there and you explain why you've never received them in the past. The other thing I always ask anybody that we're working with is, although you've never had an official accommodation plan where you've been, you know, in writing, it's been, you know, it's been documented, do you have teachers or professors that have let you stay after to finish a test? Mm-hmm. Because those are the teachers, you need them to write a letter to put in with your application. The more documentation you can give when you're submitting this stuff, the better. So if you've got a teacher from middle school or high school or a college professor that's consistently allowed you to come back and finish a test or stay late and finish a test, or has, you know, noticed that you're never finishing, please ask them to write a letter.
Mm-hmm. Yep, those informal.
It doesn't always have to be formal.
Yep, absolutely. That could be big, you know, especially if you're an adult and you've never gotten support, that could be the support right there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. But it breaks my heart because we do have people that, you know, my niece is one of them. She's a junior and bless her heart, she is not able to finish her SAT, ACT practice test. And I mean, like, I can maybe get her some extended breaks or, you know, a testing in a private room if that would help her, but extra time is just never going to happen. Where I think maybe 10 years ago, there might've been a better chance. Mm-hmm. But it is. So I do really, I try to take that personal statement. And I will say with my other niece, we did get her some accommodations and we got them put in place during her sophomore year. So she'd had them for about a year before she took the SAT and they initially denied her. So we did the whole appeal, write the letters, denied. We did a third appeal. This time we had, she wrote the letter, her parents wrote a letter, her teachers wrote letters, and boom, approved her third time. So sometimes it's just persistence.
It is, yeah.
Like you got to beat him down a little. But at the end of the day, you know, if you have the opportunity to get accommodations during middle school, high school, take them. Absolutely. Take them.
Yep.
Don't think it's going to be a negative reflection. It's not. There's nothing negative. No college or medical school or law school knows that you got an accommodation on that test when they receive your scores.
Mm-hmm. It's not a permanent record that follows you around. It's something that you have to give them. And I think that's a big misconception as well, is that there's this looming permanent record that for younger students, parents might not want that on their record, but it could be nothing but beneficial for them when they get into college or when they try to do their ACT, SAT to have that proof.
I got one here from a couple years ago from somebody we were trying to help get accommodations on the USMLE, which is part of their medical licensing. So she's already done the MCAT. She's done medical school. She's now on the, you know, flip side trying to get those licensing and certifications as she goes through. And they denied her and it just frustrated me. And again, same stuff. Like we just don't see, like your achievement testing was all average. And I'm like, again, not apples to apples.
Right.
I believe we appealed this one and I'm pretty sure she got it. I think sometimes they want to see just how bad do you want it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think probably if there's anyone out there listening that would allow me to sit in on when they're discussing, like the committee that discusses the accommodations, I would give anything to be a fly on the wall because I want to hear. I know they have like a psychologist. I know they have someone that understands the psychoeducational evaluations of the neuropsychs, and they understand how to read through that and how to interpret it. But I want to know how they justify it being a gatekeeper or a way to determine someone's performance on a test that is 10 times harder.
Mm-hmm. You would think they'd be a little bit more lax with it since it is significantly harder than things like that. But I guess it's all about their checklist.
Mm-hmm. And I guess at the end of the day, too, is that if you're giving somebody accommodations on these tests, thinking that they don't need it or they don't deserve it, you know, I think that the medical school, law school, college, whatever it is, whatever the test is, that's the place where you really prove if you can do it or not, right? And that's where, like, give them a chance.
Right. They've especially in cases like the USMLE. I mean, they've passed everything. They're in. They're well.
Gosh, they've made it this far.
Exactly. So why hold them back? Like at that point, it's
kind of how I feel about the bar exam. It's like these people are like 3-4 points away. They're so close, right?
Yeah.
And
exactly.
They have a documented disability. Maybe not a lifetime of accommodations, but they've had some accommodations through law school. And you know, to be sitting here and not being able to practice and work because you can't get, you know, the you can't get the accommodation you need. Mm-hmm. It's heartbreaking. So
it is.
When we talk to parents, let's talk about our clients, the recommendations we make to try to avoid this kind of stuff. Obviously,
early intervention.
Take the accommodations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Early. The earlier, the better. Document everything. Anytime anyone's offered you help or given you support in any way that's an employee of a school, have them write a letter.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think make sure your personal statement really outlines and explains your history of need, the functional limitations, how your disability, anxiety, ADHD, dyslexia, whatever it is, impacts your ability to take this test.
And I will say another key point is making sure that you are getting on top of this process early, because a lot of the times, I mean, there are so many denials and it is not a quick like in and out process with that. Like that takes time. And then sometimes you have to go through the second denial letter and the third denial letter. And that is not a week long process. So make sure that you are on top of your timing. You know when your deadlines are and you have your documentation that you need in advance. Because a lot of the times you will need your clinician or whoever is administering your testing to fill out some kind of form for you.
Yep. Or whoever's prescribing your medication, whoever your therapist is. Like there are so many people that can provide documentation. And so you want to make sure that you are collecting all of that and you're giving yourself plenty of time. So be aware of the deadlines for all of this paperwork. Mm-hmm. Get it in early. Some, I think LSAT sometimes, we've had people like in 2 or 3 days get responses. And then in other instances, I feel like with some of this stuff, it's been months. So don't hope that it's going to be fast. Plan for it to be long and be pleasantly surprised when you get your response back quickly.
Absolutely. And that's unfortunately where a lot of people get burned. It's not because they did something wrong. It's just because no one really told them what the system expects and how to do that. But the earlier that you can plan, the more control over that you will have. So it's
nothing so breaks our heart more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When they call us and they're like, I need this by Thursday. You're like, physically impossible. Yeah.
Sorry.
It breaks my heart. So it
is. Unfortunately, it's the sad part is the lack of communication because, you know, some of these organizations are so large that there's just not like one person that's sending out like text reminders that's like, remember to have your documentation in by this date. You have to like seek that out.
Yep. And you're asking some people with ADHD to be proactive and on top of things? Like, come on.
Yeah.
So yes, make sure you are checking those deadlines. If you guys have any questions about accommodations on any of the standardized testing or on high-stakes exams, or just for college or for high school, please feel free to reach out. We are happy to answer any questions. We have a lot of experience with this. We understand the process. We can tell you what we think, and we can absolutely offer some advice if it's something you're considering. Let's talk learning disabilities at gmail.com. Feel free to reach out. We appreciate, Sid, thanks for jumping on with me today and talking about this. This is something I feel like we've had a lot of lately because we've had a lot of college kids over the break. And so I feel like we've done a lot of, it is the season for MCAT, LSAT. Not so much SAT, but all the other stuff. And CLEX, that's coming up soon, too.
The one thing I will say before we close out is, you know, as we both talk to so many people every single day, it is really a beat down to go through this process, but that is not a reflection on you as a person. You just weren't given the rule book, and you didn't really know how to play the game. So if you want to learn and you are, you know, struggling to get those accommodations, reach out, and we're happy to help walk through that process with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you for being here, guys. If you guys have any questions, please do not hesitate to ask. If you know somebody that's going through this process, please share this episode with them so that they can get some information. And again, feel free to reach out. Hope everyone has a great day. Happy 2026, and we'll see you back here for our next episode. Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.